tonight, and I would like to have us stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, and if we can have roll call.
Good evening, commissioners. Take the roll call. Chair Hartwig, I understand, is excused. Vice Chair Hurd, also excused. Commissioner Castillo?
Here, present.
Thank you. Commissioner Griggs Murphy?
Here.
Commissioner Montgomery?
Here.
Commissioner Griffith, I understand, is excused.
She is excused.
And Commissioner Jung Lee?
Here.
Thank you.
Thank you, and I'd like to entertain nominations to be the chair for the evening.
I nominate Commissioner Castillo.
I'll second.
Hearing a second, all in favor?
Thank you.
Aye.
Any opposed? It passes unanimously. I'll turn the gavel over to Chair Castillo.
Oh, thank you so much. It's my pleasure to serve as chair tonight. I'll wait till you get back. Yeah. Oh, thank you. I have no idea when to use this, so let's start there. Thank you so much, Director. So let us move on to approval of the minutes, please. May I make a motion, have a motion on the table to approve the minutes?
I move approval of the minutes of November, or was it November? It was actually
October 22nd.
October.
Do we have a second?
I second.
Oop.
Any abstentions and or all in favor? Thank you.
Aye.
Thank you. So motion approved.
Thank you, commissioners.
Are there any old or unfinished business?
There is none.
Thank you so much. So are there any modifications to the agenda today?
I do have one. I want to cancel the closed session. It won't be needed.
Thank you very much. So we are canceling the closed session. Thank you very much. Let's move on to new business.
New business. Good evening, commissioners. Thank you for being here. We are moving into new business, which is the first item is the swearing in of two lieutenants who will become sergeants. I would like to invite, sergeants, I'm sorry. Oops, I got that backwards. That's why I will turn it over to Chief Duplessis to give an introduction of this item. Thank you.
As executive director, it's whatever you want it to be, sir. Carol Duplessis, Chief of Police. I'm very, very proud and pleased to have this ceremony here in front of the commissioners, in front of staff, and in front of others. After a rigorous assessment center testing process, we had five great candidates, and you know it would have been great to have promoted all five of them, but we narrowed it down to two candidates that we believe would do a great job. We believe what we need for the department today and to move the department forward in the future. And I'm very happy to announce that we've selected Sergeant Luther Dupree and Sergeant Paul Malik to be the next lieutenants of the department. Just a little background on each of them. First, we'll talk about Paul, then we'll have him come up. He began his career with the Oakland Health Authority Police on October 26, 1998. During that time, he served as patrol officer and Section 8 officer. 2002, he was assigned as the department's first fraud investigator and ultimately helped establish the unit. Over the next 3 years, he and his unit investigated 190 cases and recouped more than $1 million back to the Housing Authority in subsidy overpayments. In September 2005, Paul was promoted to the rank of sergeant. However, soon after, he moved and left to Florida, where he was there for almost 2 years. He later returned to California in 2008 and rejoined the department. And then October of 2011, he again tested and was re-promoted to the rank of sergeant. He was assigned as the investigation sergeant and most recently a patrol supervisor. In addition, during this time, he served as the internal affairs supervisor. He has been in charge of training. And for the last two cycles, he has been our CLIA accreditation manager and has done a wonderful job. He also previously served as acting lieutenant from 2012 to 2015 when Captain Williams was assigned as chief of police of the Oakland Unified School District Police. During his tenure, he received 9 commendations. He served in the U.S. Marine. He holds a bachelor's degree in criminal justice from Sacramento State University, holds an intermediate advanced and supervisory post-certification, and is a graduate of the California Post-Supervisory and Post-Management course. Recently, in October 2018, he graduated from the Sherman Block Institute of Leadership. He also serves as an international assessor for the Commission on Accreditation for Law Enforcement Agencies, the CLIA, and he is the current president of the California Coalition of Accredited Agencies. Matter of fact, I said international, he's getting ready to go do an on-site in Mexico that he has been assigned to. He's married to his wife, Linda, and they have 2 children. Now, needless to say, if he hadn't left for Florida, he probably would have more than 9 commendations, but that's not going to happen again, right? Luther Dupree, he's been with us since July of 2004. Luther was actually the first reserve officer we hired during that time period, but only after a few months we saw how great he is, and he became a full-time police officer. He was assigned a patrol and later became a field training officer. He was ultimately placed on the site intervention team, which is a precursor for our crime prevention unit. With a team of officers, he led successful target enforcement operations while organizing community-based programs such as block parties, toy drives, summer youth events, all along with the weed and seed concept, trying to pull out what we need to and reseed it with good, and did a wonderful job. He promoted to the rank of sergeant in September 2011 and was selected to supervise a more formalized crime prevention unit. Under his leadership, he established our Cadet Explorer program, our first one, and the anti-bullying program, which right now is a hallmark for the Oakland Unified School District, where he teaches middle and elementary school kids on anti-bullying. During his tenure, he's received 12 commendations. He holds a bachelor's degree in sociology from Sonoma State University with a minor in criminal justice, and is currently completing his Master of Science at Columbia University in criminal justice with an emphasis on public policy. He holds an immediate advanced and supervisory post certificate, and he's a 2016 graduate of the Sherman Block Institute of Leadership. He was awarded the Medal of Valor for his actions and incident in 2010, and he is married to Oakland Health Authority Detective Ida Dupree, who is assigned to the Narcotics Task Force. You here, Ida? She's there? Wave your hand. There she is. Currently, they have 5 children. Both Luther and Paul's families are here. I'll let them introduce them when they come up. But I'm going to ask you both if you guys would come up here, and then I'm going to ask our executive director to come administer the oath of office.
Right hand up and repeat after me. I, and state your name, do solemnly swear as a lieutenant of police, I will support, defend the Constitution of the United States and the laws of the state of California. And the laws of the state of California. That I will execute my responsibilities in accordance with the mission of the Oakland Housing Authority. The mission of the Oakland Housing Authority. Clearly, we should have rehearsed. And the principles and values of the police department.
And the principles and values of the police department.
And that I take this obligation freely. Without mental reservation or purpose of evasion. And that I will faithfully discharge the duties that I'm about to enter with compassion, fairness, honor, and integrity.
And that I will faithfully discharge the duties that I'm about to enter with compassion, fairness, honor, and integrity.
And service foremost in my thinking.
Service foremost in my thinking.
Thank you. Congratulations, Lieutenant.
Thank you.
Part of tradition in law enforcement is a badge pinning ceremony. And we'll have Paul first, but he has selected his son Calvin to come and pin his badge on him. So we invite you up. You're not mad at him, right? He didn't punish you for anything. You a pope, right? All right, you're good? All right. And for now, Lieutenant Dupree, I'd like to have Olivia to come up. If you poke him, Santa won't be coming.
There you go.
Again, congratulations to both of you, and as Luther and Paul have told me, I'm a very hard man to please, so none of that's going to change. It's going to be a hard road for all of you, for both of you, but I know you're going to do great things. So I want to invite you up to make some comments and introduce your families, Paul.
And there's a mic right there if you'd like to grab it. Right there. Yeah. Paul. Just... there's a little button. Very good.
Testing. So I brought my family here, my wife Linda, my daughter Abigail, my son Calvin, my mom Paji, and my mother-in-law Myrna. So October has been a significant month throughout my life. I began my law enforcement career on October 26th of 1998. This is the same day that my sister and friend, Executive Director Patricia Wells, was hired. So, but she's gone a little bit higher on the food chain than I have. So, on October 14th, 2001, I married my beautiful wife, Linda, and she in turn gave us Calvin and Abby. On October 13th, 2008, I returned to OHAPD after a two-year hiatus, as Chief had mentioned. We call Florida the F word in our family. We don't mention that state anymore. So. And now on October 1st, on October of 2016 was also the last cherished moments I spent with my father, Don Malik, who pinned my badge when I was a sergeant. And now October 1st, 2018, my promotion date for lieutenant. So I'd like to thank Executive Director Eric Johnson and the commission for their unwavering support of the police department throughout my career. I'd like to thank Captain James Williams, who was my field training officer, then supervising corporal, then supervising lieutenant, now supervising captain, but most of all, my longest and dearest friend in the department. To Chief Carol DePlessis, my mentor, my kahuna, my family and I are indebted to you and OHA for taking us back in. Your counsel and leadership have made me into the man I am today. I look forward to the challenges that Luther and I will face to keep the ship steered in your direction and your vision. To squads 2 and 4 for their professionalism and their patience for taking my leadership, especially coming from an admin position. And then to my mom and dad, thank you for modeling the way in parenting, life, love, and marriage. And finally, to my real jefe, my boss, my wife, Linda. Viktor Frankl said it best, love is the ultimate and highest goal to which man can aspire. Those who have a why to live can bear with almost any how. Linda, you've been my why since February of 2000. And your love and compassion to make everyone in our lives more fortunate have gotten us through the toughest of times and the best of times. My other brother, Don, who is a deputy chief up in Washington. He told me, do not forget the importance of time with your family. He says, don't let your promotion at work get you a demotion at home. So, Linda, I look forward to this, to a multitude of best of times with you and the kids. So thank you very much.
Great speech, Lieutenant Malik. I do not have a written speech, but I will say this. Today I have, and this is important for me, but my father, Luther Dupree, Junior, I should say, as I'm the third here with me, my mother couldn't make it, but Pop, I love you. Thank you so much. Before I continue, thank you, Mr. Johnson, Commission staff, everyone from directors, Chief of Police, Captain, you guys are amazing. I really appreciate it. Paul, you've taught me a lot, a great deal. I'll talk to the fellow officers in a moment. My uncle is here, Uncle Norris Dupree, and my dad's brother, younger brother. My cousin, Norris, Dr. Norris Dupree, he just completed his PhD over at University of Nevada, Reno. So congratulations again, cousin, and thank you for making it here. My Aunt Janice and Uncle Darren, you guys have raised me a great deal since I've moved out to California, and without you, I wouldn't be here. So there's a lot of people I can name, my Alameda family, the Wards, so many people, the Gregories, just a slew of people. My cousin back there, Artesia, I see you. I thank you from the bottom of my heart. But again, Father, you guys have taught me how to be humble, and I hope I've done that, and I will continue to do so. Is because of your teachings and your raisings that I'm here today. When things are against you, continue to move forward. Treat people good, treat people fair. I don't always succeed at that, but I do try. And I'll continue to try. Ida, my wife, man, you know me. I'm stubborn as a mule, but yet and still, but they call you spicy for a reason. So I guess it balances out, but I appreciate you and you're just sticking with me and hanging in there when I'm complaining about certain things or when that A-type personality comes out at home. You put it in check, indeed, and you've helped me. In fact, it's taking the lead on raising a wonderful home for us, in which our son is obviously in the military now, Marine Corps. Our daughter's working, but I have two older boys as well that couldn't be here, but you've done a lot raising them. Last but not least, we're standing up here as lieutenants, but I can tell you, all the hard work is from these guys in the back. It's because of you that I think I'm here. The sergeants, man, you guys have pushed me to be great, and I appreciate that. You guys work hard, and you've heard me say this before. We don't get to these places by ourselves. It's a team effort. I believe in that. I bleed that, and hopefully we continue to keep that moving forward. Again, thank you. Thank you for your time. Appreciate it. Thank you.
I guess you can see why they were the choice. Commissioner, this concludes the presentation. If you have any comments or any questions.
I'd like to see if my commissioners have comments. Please. No, you first.
I just would like to just congratulate you on your promotion, and I think that you do a wonderful job and working with to help to keep the Housing Authority and the city safe. Thank you very much, and I really congratulate you on a job well done. And I'm sure that you will continue to strive to make safety our priority here in the city of Oakland. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Montgomery. I, too, want to... I'm so grateful to be here for this particular moment. It's beautiful just to see you guys standing here. You exemplify honor and pride in our community. I know I don't have to tell you how to be because I know who your chief is, right? I know that community policing is real here in Oakland and that there are parts of our city that needs peacemakers in nonviolent ways, and I believe this is the police department that makes peacemakers in our city, and I so appreciate each and every one of you, and congratulations to our two new sergeants.
Lieutenants.
Lieutenants?
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Lieutenants. Well earned. And the expectation just went up, but I'm sure you'll rise to it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. That was beautiful. Thank you again, officers, for showing up. Appreciate all y'all. So let's move on to item B, please.
Item B is a public hearing on proposed changes to the Oakland Housing Authority's Housing Choice Voucher Administrative Plan, and I would like Dominica Henderson, our Director of Planning, Implementation, and Compliance, to walk us through a couple of the quick changes that we're proposing to conform with some of the HOPLA rules.
Okay, well, that's a tough act to follow. So I will be brief. okay. Good evening, Commissioners. My name is Dominica Henderson. Tonight's presentation will discuss some reasons that we are proposing the following proposed policy changes. We'll also talk about the timeline for the implementation of these changes, as well as the public comment process. We will discuss, or I will discuss briefly, how the ACOP and the admin plan impact OHA processes. I will wrap up by reviewing the changes to both documents, and then we'll have an opportunity for questions if you might have them, after which you will have to open and close two public hearings, one for the ACOP and then one for the admin plan.
And this will come back to you for review and approval once we get finished the public comment period, and that'll be in January.
So after each presentation, we will open public comment and
each
then close
item.
It.
Yeah,
each
you one. Call it open and call it closed. We have no speakers available at this time. So.
Okay.
All right.
The impetus for the proposed changes is primarily the new regulations or guidance that has been published by HUD. There are also some necessary updates that we need to make in order to include policy around approved MTW activities. Some of the new requirements have some time sensitivity, especially those that are regulatory. And so we have brought this item before you a little earlier than normal in our typical timeline, just to make sure that we're meeting the time deadlines that we have. And I'll discuss those a little bit more. For additional clarification, the primary changes that we're proposing were driven by guidance that was released by HUD since the last admin plan and ACOP were published. For example, the HOTMA and VAWA laws were authorized by Congress and enacted, but it took HUD several months to actually develop guidance for us to implement them into our policy documents. And so as a result, we have to come today to make sure we incorporate some of those changes. Since the last update to the admin plan of the ACOP in April 2017, we have not incorporated any of the guidance that has come out since that date. So that's about a year and a half ago. And so we are using this opportunity to make sure our policies are in line and in compliance with the federal regulations. There's a particular change that we have to make that I'll discuss later by March, and so that's why we're moving on this more advanced timeline than normal. Just one thing I would like to note as well, we will have a more comprehensive change to the admin plan and to the ACOP coming in the spring of 2019. So these changes that are being presented to you today are those that they're primarily regulatory, as I mentioned, but they are also changes that we need to make in order to meet the certain deadlines from the federal government. We will have hopefully a more robust discussion about various policies that are more discretionary starting in April, and then we'll be able to bring a full comprehensive admin plan to the board during the summer. Additionally, OHA, just to give you a review of the timeline, OHA announced the public comment period in the Oakland Tribune on November 30th. I personally sent the announcement via email to City of Oakland officials, other public agencies, and various stakeholder groups. We have the public comment period that started on December 3rd, and it'll end on January 3rd, 2019. And we hope to receive board approval at the January 28th board meeting. We're having one public hearing for the proposed changes for each of the documents. which will occur, as I mentioned, directly after this presentation. The comprehensive changes to the admin plan and to the ACOP will be presented in spring 2019. And so today is the public hearing that we'll have. We'll also visit the RAB later this week in order to present the changes to the RAB as well. This slide and the next slide are a review of how the process works to get laws that are enacted by Congress into policy at OHA. And so basically Congress enacts a law, authorizes regulatory departments like HUD to implement those laws or the statutes. And as authorized, HUD develops regulations and rules and often issues guidance to create the structure for how PHAs will administer the program. So usually public housing program regulations are 24 CFR 960. It's a very thick, you know, book of regulations. And in that, it includes how, it includes the maximum or the threshold for which public housing agencies can operate their public housing program. So we have to abide by whatever is in the regulations as they are restricting us from exceeding those. We do have an opportunity to waive some regulations using our MTW authority, and we do that quite often, and we have a couple of changes in here that are being proposed so that we are in line with the MTW plan as well. The authority's ACOP establishes a policy direction for the administration of the public housing program. The ACOP affects 844 households managed by third-party property management companies under the Asset Management Department, and 762 apartments under direct OHA management. Mm-hmm. So OHA incorporates discretionary policies as allowed within the scope of the regulations, as well as I mentioned, MTW policies that waive the regulations and then replace them with our own local policies. So the pretty much the same process applies to, as I just described in the previous slide, applies for the admin plan, which guides the administration of the voucher program and impacts far more households, almost 13,500. The primary regulations for the admin plan are in 24 CFR 982 and then 983 for PBVs. Again, OHA is allowed some discretion in the admin plan policy to be able to set its own policy or waive some of the regulations to create local policy under our MTW authorities. So now I will just review the proposed changes that we have in summary. We have some regulatory changes that we've used to incorporate VAWA, Violence Against Women Act forms that we're required to provide to applicants and participants. Our Chapter 7 changes include both an MTW modification to the authorization of release of information form, as well as some regulatory guidance that came out recently regarding earned income verification methods. The regulatory, and I do want to preface, I should have said this before, but the regulatory items are required. And so a number of them that even though we're getting them approved into the policy documents today, we have, because they're required by HUD, we have to do them. So some of them our procedures have already been amended to incorporate them, such as the verification as well as the authorization of release. But we just want to make sure it's formalized in our policy documents, since we had to come to you for a time-sensitive item as well. Additionally, we had some regulatory changes to chapters 13 and 16. We incorporated the requirements for over-income families. This is the time-sensitive change that that we had to incorporate by March. This is based on some new policy guidance that was issued a couple months ago, where we have to notify over-income families and treat them a little differently than we have in the past. Okay. And so we also are incorporating some new VAWA forms as well as the noticing requirements, which we have already incorporated, but we just want to make sure that these are obviously captured in the ACOP and also in the admin plan. We modified our flat rent policy that's described in the admin plan to ensure that we are charging a flat rent of 80% of the FMR as required by HUD. This is a change from previous versions of the ACOP that did not have that requirement, but new HUD regulations have this 80% of FMR requirement. Additionally, we have a regulatory change clarifying the debt repayment thresholds and incorporating additional VAWA forms. So VAWA kind of hits many different chapters of both the admin plan and the ACOP, and so we just wanted to make sure we are incorporating the program requirements in each chapter. For the admin plan, we had quite a few changes, but most of them are regulatory. We have a new preference for mainstream vouchers. We received an allocation of 28 additional mainstream vouchers as part of a grant application that was awarded. And so we have to create a preference in our admin plan in order to serve those families and make sure that we have those families on our wait list. And so this is a grant funding requirement. It's not regulatory, but in order for us to receive and administer the voucher funds, we have to make this preference change. Additionally, we had some modified EIV procedures, various regulatory changes in the income and subsidy determination chapter, and as well as the verification chapter. In the program administration chapter, we had some regulatory changes to VAWA, to how we determine elevated blood levels. We also incorporated the VAWA emergency transfer plan and made a couple of adjustments in that chapter. And chapter 17 is the project-based voucher chapter, which had a series of changes. We started by incorporating the incorporating the language, regulatory language around caps and contract expirations. We also clarified our MTW local policy that has already been approved by both the board and HUD, just to make sure that we were clarifying our outline of local program preferences into certain PBV units. We had some regulatory updates to the waitlist section, to income targeting, et cetera. Then we also had some regulatory changes around VAWA and the emergency transfer policy. And you'll see with this clarification of OHA policy for the contract unit size, we had a modification that we would like to propose. We have a current MTW approved activity where we're allowed to modify our occupancy standards. And so we want to make sure that each site because we have site-based wait lists, we wanted to make sure that each site has the discretion in order to determine the occupancy standards, and they have to be approved by OHA. But what we did was we had an occupancy standard that not all sites would be beholden to. And so we wanted to make sure that we were making the policy as broad as it needs to be so that the sites have the discretion and then it's approved by OHA. So this is a clarification of MTW policy in order to make sure that each site has its own set occupancy standard. Otherwise, we default to the OHA standard that's used for the traditional voucher program. Additionally, in Chapter 17, we updated language to match rent limits for tax credit properties and made sure that we were incorporating the regulations properly there. We clarified that OHA will not implement small area FMRs for PBV units. That was something that has come up recently, but we just have not, since April 2017, we haven't had the opportunity to incorporate that. So we're not using small area FMRs, and we just wanted to make sure that was clear in the admin plan.
And I also want to say that is the small area FMR HUD could release requiring us to use it. We were on the initial list to be required to use small area FMRs. We did a great deal of advocacy to get us removed from that so that we could make local determinations. The small area FMRs in Oakland simply don't work, and we went to the assistant secretary and the secretary at the time and really explained why. They're based on census tracts and zip codes, and I think that zip codes are what they landed on for the requirement. The problem with zip codes here is they have very expensive rent and areas and very less expensive rent areas. And what you were really going to do is move the Housing Choice Voucher Program into the areas of town that were less had less high rent, But then the landlords in that area would end up getting the higher rent based on the fact that you have a zip code that goes from sort of the hills around the 580 down into the flatlands. And we thought it was going to artificially actually increase. And HUD agreed with us, and that we're just a city that is unique because we have extremely affluent neighborhoods and disenfranchised neighborhoods adjacent to each other in the same zip code. So it just really didn't work for Oakland. But there may be a point where they require it, at which point we would have to come back and implement it.
And finally, we clarified another approved OHA activity where we will no longer provide utility reimbursement payments. So this is something that we have had approved for a few years, probably about 3 years now, but we just never captured it in our admin plan changes. So we're just making sure that our admin plan is caught up to our actual MTW plan. And that's it. I appreciate the opportunity to provide some information about the proposed changes. As I mentioned, most of them are regulatory, and the ones that are approved by MTW or clarifications of MTW policy are of approved MTW policies. So we're not proposing anything that has not already been approved before. I just want to make sure that's
clear. And aside from tonight's public hearing, where we can hear people talk, people can submit written comments, and they do that how?
They can submit public comments by email to mtw@oakha.org. They can also submit them to me, and they can mail them in via email. We've had a couple in the past. We've had people who have requested to make a verbal comment, and I've taken those as well. And we record them. We bring those back before you the next time we come in January, and then hopefully we'll receive approval. The public hearing process, again, is December 3rd to, or I'm sorry, the public comment process is December 3rd to January 3rd. And so during that period, we are open for all comments and feedback from the public.
Great. Thank you, Dominica.
Let me open it up to see if our commissioners have any comments or questions, please. Ms. Montgomery? Yes, please.
Okay, I'll ask my first. The residency preference, could you explain that?
Sure.
Let's
see, the preference.
The policy, yeah.
Which one? Admin, we had two preferences. I can explain both.
The applicants who live or work in the city of Oakland.
The live-work preference?
Oh yeah, sure. So we have a series of preferences. The live-work preference is one where applicants can check whether they check and then provide documentation verifying that they either live or work in Oakland. And so that adds essentially a point to their application to give some weight to it. And so we have that preference option for our site-based wait list. We don't have we have a large centralized wait list for tenant-based vouchers, but most of the sites have their own site-based wait lists. And so they apply that preference when they open wait lists, and families are able to indicate that they have that preference, and then it's verified later. It helps to be able to ensure that we're housing families in a certain order. So in addition to the live-work preference, we also have a homeless preference. We have some various preferences, but the live-work one is for applicants who either live or work, in Oakland.
Live or work.
Live or work, yeah. Live and or work. They could
If you live in Oakland, you get a preference. If you work in Oakland, you get a preference. If you live and work, you get the most preference.
Oh, okay. All right, I understand that. Okay. Because I was kind of questioning live or work in Oakland. I've dealt with it before, but I was wanting to understand that. Okay.
Yeah, it's actually two preferences, and together they become a more enhanced preference because you have both of them. So when when they administer the preferences on the wait list, for example, all the veterans go first. But if you're a veteran and you're 62 and disabled, then you would go to the top of the veterans.
Okay.
Does that make sense? So once we get down to the local preferences, we've gotten through the senior, disabled, and veterans, which are the ones that are required, which are all the first. Then we get to a live-work preference. And that's if you live in Oakland and work in Oakland, you'd go up to that.
Yeah.
If you just live or work in Oakland, one of them, then you'd be the next group.
Oh, okay. Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Commissioner Lane? Please.
I'm still trying to understand the flat rents. In what instances are flat rents established? And is that primarily related to what Director Johnson first talked about. It's how you make up for the vast differences within the zip codes.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, flat rents are only applied to the public housing program. And so that is the 844 units and the 762 units that are managed by OHA. So it's only applies to 1,606 units. And essentially what would happen is that families who are pretty high, who have a pretty high household income, are allowed to, well, all families are allowed to elect the income-based rent or a flat rent. The flat rent is generally more of a enticement to the families that have high household income because their income-based rent is high. We offer a flat rent that might be lower than their income-based rent. They have the option to elect annually that they would choose the flat rent. Mm-hmm. Recently, it would probably be less than their income. If they're selecting it, it's going to be less than their income-based rent.
In general, that's true. And keep in mind, the public housing program goes up to 80% AMI families. So it's higher than Section 8. And so people can end up staying there. And I actually really liked, they used to have a ceiling rent. They turned it into what they call a flat rent. Then they required us to increase the flat rents. The reason I never have really brought that forward to increase voluntarily is I really believe you want to have earned income in communities. And that encourages people to stay. And there are people in public housing who have very good incomes. And I like the fact that there's the informal network of how people get jobs. So at Lockwood, for example, we have people who work at Southwest Airlines. And the people in the neighborhood, if they have vacant positions and they're recruiting, can tell their neighbors. And that's actually one of the best ways people find about jobs. What HUD decided to do is say that we needed to reestablish our FMRs based on a certain rent criteria that increased that flat rent dramatically from what we were charging. So it did go up a lot. It also went up on seniors. We had one senior who I actually saw at Holiday Splendor this year, again, that wrote a really wonderful letter to HUD because I encouraged all our seniors to put their objections. I don't know if you remember, it was like 2013. It was one of the tirades I was on, that why would they increase rent on seniors? And she wrote this wonderful letter to the secretary, which got bounced around and ended up getting emailed me back so I could please provide my comments. Mm-hmm. And I would tell you that my comment back to HUD was, I know this individual very well. She can reach me on the phone anytime. If she wanted to talk to me about it, she would certainly do that. What she's asking is why HUD is changing this policy, and I think she deserves an answer. I don't know if she ever got one. I've never asked her. But
that's good.
But it's, I think, maintaining affordability and keeping, particularly, remember, this is just public housing. Keeping earned income within that neighborhood and those communities is really important because it builds a healthier community for everyone. So I was very much opposed to HUD's rule that we're now having to follow.
So it's it has been in place for, I think, at least 3 years. It was something that was squeezed in an appropriations bill. So there's not really much way around it except for an MTW activity. We did some research, and currently we have about fewer than 10 families on flat rent. That has declined over the past couple of years. We had about 50 when this policy was first implemented. So over that time, we've had a number of families decide to use their income-based rent, probably because it's cheaper.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Donna?
I wanted to ask about the Violence Against Women's Act for emergency transfer. Mm-hmm. So it says it's a regulatory?
That's right.
So it's a preference if, I mean, because I know transfers are difficult, and it's if they're not safe or they can request to be transferred.
So it's not a preference,
but it is.
We do have we are required by the regulations to have an emergency transfer plan for VAWA. Yes. So any applicant, well, any participant that would come to us with a qualifying situation. Uh-huh. We have to determine whether or not they're eligible for the transfer under the emergency transfer plan for VAWA specifically. So there are different types of emergency transfers. VAWA is a specific type. This emergency transfer plan and all of the associated documents that we added are specifically for VAWA families. And so it's not a preference on a wait list or anything, but we do handle the families differently. We have different confidentiality requirements, different record-keeping requirements for victims of violent crime.
Right.
Or victims of crime.
It is victims, it's not just women. It applies to both women and men. It's just called the Violence Against Women Act.
Thank you, Commissioners. You actually asked some of the questions that I was going to ask, so it was great. I was curious, on page 9, and I'm looking into the document itself, section 13.
Of the admin plan, the first item?
Admin plan first, okay. OHA.
There's the ACOG.
Concerning over-income families.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I was curious because at some point it looks like we, if I'm reading this correctly, we would be charging them over or higher of fair market rent. Am I reading that correctly? Or charge the family a monthly rent that is the higher of the applicable fair market rent or the amount of monthly subsidy for the unit?
Which?
These are our over-income families.
You're on page 5?
It's possible that I'm in the wrong section.
That's the ACOG.
So is that the next time? Can I ask that question next time?
No, we can ask it now. It's just we needed the right one.
Yeah, I want to make sure I'm on the right page.
This is the page 9 on the, might be the admin plan.
Yeah.
Am I looking at it?
Yes, so it's page 9 of the ACOP, which
Thank
is
you.
The public housing document.
Oh, okay.
So these are for our over-income families in our public housing or in our tenants?
Yeah, this is just for public housing.
And just for public housing.
Exactly, just for public housing. It's for families, as Mr. Johnson mentioned. The public housing program goes up to 80% for it's for families. Families can be admitted at up to 80% of the area median income.
Right.
But once they are admitted, we do not kick them out or kick them off the program for exceeding that 80% number.
Okay.
When a family household income reaches 120%, mm-hmm. Then two consecutive years in a row, then we are required to change the rent. This is a regulatory change that just came out, I believe, a month and a half, maybe 2 months ago. And so HUD is still developing guidance to inform PHAs on how to actually implement this. What did come out was that we have to change our policies by March 24th or something like that in order to accommodate this new policy. So, yes, we would be required to charge those families more. Mm-hmm. And just how we go about that still remains to be seen because HUD is generating additional guidance. But at this point, we have to, we do have a noticing requirement that we have to meet. So we have to check monthly to make sure that there are families, to check the income levels of certain families. If there are any families that exceed that threshold, then we have to notify them after 1 year. And then after 2 years is when we would modify rent amounts. So,
but it looks, I mean, it says in here, terminate.
It does, absolutely.
Or terminate, yes.
Yeah.
And
you have either terminate or charge them more than the fair market rate.
That's right.
And that is absolutely what you're getting at. That is a requirement by the current administration to try
Thank
and force
you.
People out of public housing and make it more expensive to stay so they'll make room for somebody else, which to me is a policy that, again, just erodes a community. And it gets the people who have actually been most successful at using the resource to help lift up the whole neighborhood and other families. It's forcing them out. And the problem you have when you have high rental markets is, as you know, not only the cost of it, but actually finding a unit. And this is a unit with children.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's kind of an appalling requirement.
Or with families with a lot of people working.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
So that's why they're...
Because if you have children who've grown up and you have a lot of members of the household are working, suddenly
exactly.
the income of the household goes up and suddenly your rent is supposed to exceed
Correct.
To 120 AMI. It's just not, it's a federal policy that we're required to adhere to, and all you can kind of hope is by the time we get there, some of the most recent changes in the election will kind of modify some of these requirements.
I know. First, a positive swing would be let's get them to our family self-sufficiency program and help them buy a house because mm-hmm. they probably are in that income bracket where we could move them into home ownership. Mm-hmm. The problem is some of our families probably get scared and they don't tell us about their income, and then all of a sudden they're in bigger trouble.
And the challenge is exactly what you said. The highest incomes are probably combined incomes of working adult mm-hmm. household members and not really the head of household.
Right.
And that means that the head of household who could try and be eligible to purchase a home would have to get guarantees of the other incomes, and that becomes really problematic.
Okay. Well, I saw that, and I just wanted to get clarification on that.
Yeah, it is a federally required change, unfortunately.
Thank you. The other question I had was concerning our properties that are managed by another entity.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And I was curious whether our regulations trumps what they want to do with the building, because I presume that their management style or they have their own management guidelines and regulations. Do we instill first what we want to see, or do they get to
For the public housing units, as well as for the project-based voucher units, the admin plan applies for the PBV units, and the ACOP applies to the public housing units. So at a lot of the sites, for instance, for the public housing sites that are managed by third parties, all but one of them is mixed, so it has multiple different funding sources.
Mm-hmm.
For those sites, the ACOP would only apply to the public housing units. And not to if they have PBVs or something else, or just tax credit only units in that site. So it does apply first to the public housing units, but not to all the units at that site.
So they're mixed.
So you've got families living in the same building that are under different regulations.
Subsidies,
Mm-hmm. And I would tell you that one thing that Dave Cadu is working on with HUD is to do a Section 18 disposition request under the RAD concept, which is different than our regular Section 8, to voluntarily convert any public housing unit that are in those mixed finance, mixed income communities where you have tax credit, project-based Section 8, mm-hmm. and public housing, that they would actually move under the Section 8 program as a RAD voucher.
Oh.
So he's had a meeting with several of the nonprofits already and is discussing fixing that issue. Then this only applies to the 100% public housing sites. Now, what that means for us,
mm-hmm.
is that we have currently 1,606, am I right, units that are under public housing. So you're going to take a group of those that are going to move to a RAD disposition, and this won't apply. Then we already have the senior site dispositions of the three buildings, Harrison Tower, Oak Groves North and South, that are moving to full project-based Section 8 vouchers. This won't apply.
Okay.
That leaves us with a handful of developments left, Campbell Village, Peralta, Lockwood, Palo Vista, and Adele, which is 30 units. That'll be the remaining portfolio in public housing. And I do think it's going to be an ongoing drive for the agency to try and move those in a humane and in a not only a humane way, but a way to maybe even increase the number of units we have out of the public housing program into something different, whether it's RAD or a Section 18 disposition. There won't be that many units left under the public housing. I don't know the whole count once that's done, but it's somewhere around 700.
You know, one of the
families.
Perspectives from the tenants, there's so much going on in their business, in their buildings when they're trying to understand these processes, why one unit mm-hmm. has this many inspections, and why did my rent go up and so-and-so didn't go up. And I just want to tell you that it's so confusing to the tenants that live in some of these buildings. And so if we can, as the primary agency, really explain it better with transparency and educate the staff to share it better, it would be really great. Because I've heard this from across the state,
That's like a real, real interesting concept. Anna Gadanovskaya is the one who actually oversees all of those mixed finance. You don't have to come up, Anna. I just wanted to say she's here and listening. She has done a series of trainings over the years since she's become the manager of asset management that are really well received, by the way, by the contract management firms. One of the things, though, you need that I think it requires a sort of vigilance in perpetually doing the training because, like us all, there's staff turnover. So we can bring everybody in from all the nonprofits who manage these and do the training, but in 6 months they may not be the same people at these sites. And so it does really require regular doing it. The training she does is all day. It's been really well received.
Oh,
they
good.
Walk out with the admin plan and the ACOP, and they go through our ADA requirements and the VAWA requirements and a lot of those kind of unfunded, unspoken things that maybe they weren't really that trained on when they walked in the door. So I think it's a very valuable thing, and I'm not sure what she has this year scheduled, but she does it regularly.
Oh, wonderful. Mm-hmm. I believe that that's good. That goes from us to, you mm-hmm. know, the front staff. But unfortunately, all that beautiful information is not trickling down to the tenants well. So just maybe consider that in your training to talk about how they are going to translate this for their tenants on an ongoing basis.
Yeah, how they communicate it.
Yeah.
Maybe develop some of that materials would be helpful.
Well, I'm particularly happy to see that the Shelter Plus Care conversion preference has been put into it.
Right.
I really read this.
We just want to make sure we are.
You did. It's great.
Including in the documents what we intend to do.
I'm so happy about that. Now, I'm not looking at the whole thing. You gave mm-hmm. me like a lot of documentation, but you only gave me the pages where there are changes. Is that correct?
That's right.
Because the bigger document
500 pages each.
Right.
And so, it is available online.
It
it's
is.
On, if you want a PDF, we're happy to get that.
Well,
we can print them. It will kill some trees.
No. But that's why I didn't see anything about the credit report piece and how we address credit issues and how we address evictions and the mm-hmm. denial process and the appeal process. We didn't make any changes, I presume, to that process.
We did not. And should we want to propose any changes, we would propose those in the spring during the comprehensive review of the admin plan and the ACOP. So we have not proposed anything. I mean, pretty much everything that we proposed here is regulatory today.
And then I would say that the MTW changes are generally changes the admin plan and ACOP that coincide with what we're changing in the plan. So
right.
if we have
right.
an MTW activity. And what still remains that I think, and I brought it up, and we do have to get there, mm-hmm. is to really have the committee established to go through particularly the admin plan, because I think the ACOP we can look at and will take less time once we've gone through the admin plan because they're being mirrored everywhere
yes.
we can mirror them. So aside from what you brought up, some of these specific changes to the public housing program that are required in the ACOP, we really do want to, and Dominica has been after me for about a year and a half, to get the board committee established so we can actually walk through the whole document, because they're very important policy decisions in places that we can interject that we really would like to get some guidance from the board to see what we want to do prior to the whole revision. I think it has to go to a committee where they can devote the time, and it's going to take some time and work. But they're important decisions. And what she's been working on and her team have been working on are sort of the decision points within each one of those.
Correct.
So that what do we not have choices over, but we can choose here. So what is the best choice here?
Yes.
And that gets, you know, for example, in the ACOP that you brought up regarding the 120 or move out, there's not a decision there. It's federally required, but there are decisions, particularly on the admin plan, that we can make and that we want to make, and we want to get some board input on that and then propose the draft back to the full board.
Well, I definitely want us to look at it when our chair and our co-chair comes back. Perhaps we could
maybe
do
in
that
January establish
later.
The committee.
Yeah.
We were looking at doing it at late spring, I think,
that's
is what
right.
When
year.
We wanted to start, of 2019. And I think it will take 6 months plus to get through the documents, because we don't want to overwhelm it.
No, of
we're thinking
not.
Going chapter by chapter, like having a meeting on one chapter and then the next and walking through it that way.
If my concern is that due to the gentrification and the conditions that our tenants and our renters are under, is our denial process and our credit report decision-making processes takes into account what people are realistically going through in the nature of this beast called the rental housing market.
And the credit report is a little more complicated, because that's suitability, not eligibility.
Suitability.
And we'll get into that, and because there's a huge difference. If you have, we won't deny you access to the Section 8 program because of a credit report. A private landlord, we may, depending on the circumstances, when occurred, And that's in the admin plan and what discretion we have. I mean, for example, as you've learned, a mandatory termination is eviction. I don't have discretion.
Oh.
And there are two mandatory terminations in the Section 8 program. Failure to provide documents and an eviction.
Okay.
Within entry of the program, there are two mandatory you can't get in, and that is a lifetime sex registrant.
Of course.
Or manufacturer of methamphetamine.
Absolutely.
Within the rest, there's different decision points,
yes.
and that's what we're getting at. Like, what do we make? Eligibility for the program is done by OHA. Suitability, is it a suitable tenant, is done by the private landlord. So keep that in mind.
Okay.
So the landlord does the credit. The landlord does the credit and could deny someone based on the credit.
Mm-hmm.
In general, if they have a Section 8 voucher, though, they really look not very deeply into the credit because we're going to help them pay the rent.
Well,
so,
they do. You know that.
But
they
can
do
that.
And
I don't know that we have any ability to stop it, but when we get into those meetings, we can see what we want to construct.
So more on the public housing side.
Mm-hmm.
I was curious, and this is not a conversation for now, is how far back do we allow an eviction to carry weight in our decision-making, you know, and mm-hmm. whatever circumstances there are, and do we have an assessable appeal process?
And that's exactly, and that's all in our policy, and that's
good.
Exactly what we want to kind of get some input on. We are pretty, we are, if not the most, one of the more liberal in our policy
True.
At this point.
Yeah.
And the other thing that, and I think some of you have helped some folks who are getting through our process, is that it can be hard. But at the end of the day, did they walk through the process, get to be heard?
Fair
and
were, treatment.
And did they get in? It may have taken an extra month or two to get through that process.
Right.
Which is just the way we move, unfortunately.
Right.
But were they able to get through it, and did we manage that, and what were the steps? And that's actually in our policy, and it's something that within the admin plan and the ACOP both in the eligibility process is all outlined. And that's, again, right to our point
okay.
that we want to get some input
so
for.
So there's it looks like I want to be on this committee.
It does. Yeah.
Because I have so many responses to that.
Yeah.
The other thing is, of course, the immigration public charge stuff
sure.
that's happening right
yeah.
now. And whether we're clear in our language, in our documentation, how there is a way for people to come and live with us without being criminalized.
I want to be really upfront. I did it for the county meeting when Supervisor Chan had the county meeting and she invited me to come, and I was able to race over a little bit late because I was at another meeting in the city. And they did get to, they were making people feel very comfortable because the people presenting there were saying, well, the county has this policy that we don't release this and we've decided this. Mm. All that's really sweet. Mm. When you're dealing with federally assisted housing, everything gets transmitted in the business system to HUD. They can tell you the people who've requested alternate ID numbers that don't have Social Security numbers that we prorate the rent for. The federal government knows every one of those households, their address, the composition of the household, and where they're working. Mm-hmm. So our data is not like some of the other protected data for some of the healthcare systems.
Mm-hmm.
It is directly going to a HUD database. And that, to me, means exposure. And we don't really track what you're asking because to us they're eligible people, period. But there is a place within the 50058 and 50059, which are the two transmittal documents, that you report that. And in fact, we've been not ever asked about that section of it. And for the first time ever, we got a query with HUD showing what our database had said to ask to please clear it up, which we did. Most of them were pending. We just have not really been aggressively keeping that up to date.
Okay.
So they are looking at it, and they do know when you get into our program. So the idea that someone isn't going to be able to check to see if you were ever in assisted housing and maybe use that as a Jeez. Reason that you become a public charge is naive. And that, to me, is a bigger concern, is to make
okay.
sure that, you know, if it does get enacted after the comment period, and I don't know that I included the letter because I don't think it came in time that we worked with CLOFA to create. I contacted all three of our industry groups,
Thank you,
FADA,
Director.
that weekend, all
Thank
the executive
you.
Directors. But I also want to tell you that I did all three, FADA, NARO, and CLOFA,
mm-hmm.
have all opined on this. And what I also want to tell you is every one of those executive directors got back to me on a Sunday and loaded for bear. So they were, you know, there wasn't one of them that didn't respond. And
That's
I just,
excellent.
I want to hand it to all three of them. CLOFA has a working legal group that is chaired by someone I've known for years, Sue Cohen out of Cambridge, who was their legal counsel. And she really jumped on it as well. That Monday I talked to her, and we've been doing some emails. They constructed a really wonderful letter. I also shared the letter with the state, because someone who had approached me from the state that I know, saying that they were state attorney's office that were opining, and so I've given them a lot of information to put
wow.
related to housing they didn't understand. So I think they have a lot of comment that is valuable, important, and significant comments, more than just a housing authority's view. These are large trade organizations, the state of California, who've submitted comments, and it was due today, by the way.
Thank you.
That have all gone in. And what I know is it's at least going to take them several months to get through the comments, mm-hmm. and then we'll see what they have to say.
It's a scary world.
It is. And if people do ask about how the housing, including housing in that mix, to me the biggest danger of that mix is that we report everything on our families to HUD. Mm-hmm. So they really do have access to information.
It's horrendous. I'd like to open it back up to our commissioners. Was there anything else you guys wanted to? Please, Commissioner Montgomery, go ahead. No, you're good? Okay. Ms. Henderson, is there any comments that you would like to make?
I have none.
Okay. All right. Thank you. So at this time, I believe I am
you would like to
opening and closing.
But let me
no,
read,
opening
let me,
up the public hearing.
Yeah,
right
let
now.
Me read the title, and then you open and close.
Okay.
And so if we go back to the agenda items, but right now we're holding a public hearing on a proposed change to the Housing Authority's Housing Choice Voucher Administrative Plan. And now you open and close public comments.
Thank you. We are opening our public hearing, and there are
no speaker cards
at this time. And so let us close it.
Thank you. The second item is item C, which is a public hearing on proposed changes to the Housing Authority's Public Housing Admissions and Continued Occupancy Plan for the Public Housing Program.
Thank you. And let us open up our public hearing.
I have no cards.
Yes, sir. Then let us close our public hearing. Thank you.
Thank you. And we'd encourage anyone to put anything in writing to us.
Absolutely.
By early January. Thank you.
Shall we move to item
D? Thank you,
Commissioners.
Yes.
Thank you, Ms. Henderson. Always such a pleasure for all your work.
And item D is consideration of a resolution authorizing the executive director to execute a contract with Fine Line Construction in the amount not to exceed $6,665,000 plus a possible 10% contingency authority for major remodeling of the Housing Authority's administrative offices located at 1619 Harrison Street. This is a project that we have been in the design phase for a little over a year with our architect, the scope of which did grow a bit during the design phase because we've learned several things. One is we're replacing all the HVAC, and secondly, we are going to have to actually tear up the entire courtyard to reseal it. It has water intrusion that could compromise the whole building. So right out there, yeah, right out the door, the center courtyard.
Oh.
The one thing I do want to point out before I turn it over to William Bailey and Tim Lysko, who's here to give a presentation, is the company, Fine Line Construction. We have the owner here, Dori Friedman. Thank you for coming. She's CEO and owner of this. It's a women-owned business, and I've heard good things about you, and I'm pleased that you're here. I will turn it over to Mr. Bailey and let him walk us through some of the changes.
Good evening, Commissioner William Bailey.
Hi, I'm Dori Friedman. I'm Dori Friedman. I'm the CEO of Fine Line Construction, and we're about to start our 40th year in business. So let me tell you a little bit about our company. As I said, we're entering our 40th year in March. And I started the company 39 years ago and rapidly found that we wanted to be in the public sector because we wanted to do affordable housing. We've done affordable housing, primarily occupied affordable housing for many, many years. In fact, we just are completing 10 of the 29 RAD projects that were in San Francisco. We also do historical restoration. So we've done a series of Carnegie libraries, and we also do TI work. Primarily, they're related to other projects that we do. In this case, that's not the case. We consider this a TI job, and
TI stands for tenant improvements.
Yes. And it appealed to us because it is it's very detailed, and we like that. Mm-hmm. So We have, we're union, we're signatories to the carpenters and to the laborers. We have about 70 to 80 employees, and we're excited about doing this project.
Thank you.
And Tim Lysico, our construction project manager, will be overseeing this project, and he will give a brief overview.
Please, sir.
Good evening, commissioners, Eric, and esteemed colleagues and public. My name's, as it's been said, my name's Tim Lysico, and I'm the construction manager assigned to this project. Brief background, and some of it you've heard. 1619 Harrison Street was designed in the late 60s, 68, 69, and it was built in 70, 71, 72. And OHA then took occupancy. It hasn't, so that says it hasn't been fully remodeled in 46 years. And so that's what this this tenant improvement will take place. This room, I believe, was upgraded in 2010, but other than that, the executive offices and administration of the garage, first and second and partially third floors, have not been remodeled in 40 years. What we plan on doing is upgrading all the systems, more energy efficiency, new HVAC system, new high-performance lighting. As Eric said, the waterproofing of the courtyard has failed and it needs to be replaced. And other than that, that's about it. It's about 24,000 square feet, and what we're asking, or what we're recommending, is the Board of Commissioners authorize Eric and.
Very good. And I'll just add a couple of design things that we've done this year that are important. One is we're going to completely rewire the building, including data and electrical lines that it's going to take. We are blowing out everything you're going to see except for the boardroom on this floor. So there will be no walls left when they finish demolition after abatement. When they do open it up, it's a complete redesign. The lobby will be open. It will have a place for a security guard that will greet the folks, and it will also have a counter that people can come in from finance, which will be located on the first floor. We've added the number we've increased the number of conference rooms available in the building so people can have, we can have more meetings and more efficiencies. The other thing we're doing, if you look on the way in and out, we last February vacated the building so we could expose the ceiling above. So that we could actually minimize any sort of problems and change orders that we'd expect. And so the designs, I think, are very tight at this point. We're also going to expose in any of the large areas, the lobby and the largest conference room, we're going to expose the 14-foot ceilings and the ductwork, and the wiring will be on a rail so that it'll be the data wires and the will be on the rail so that they have to be kept neatly. One of the things, if you look up through the ceilings in the building, you'll see a cobweb of wires from 40 years of data and everything else. One of the challenges we had faced early in this project is we wanted to do it in phases and not actually relocate everybody. That determined to be impossible because we couldn't tell what data wires were currently the ones we were using and which ones had been added. And the only solution became getting out of the building and tearing everything out and starting fresh. So that's why we were actually relocated up to 1805 now while we completed the design work. We also need to add some things. If you go into where the large conference room on the second floor is and my office and was and that whole line, there actually is nothing between, if you go up to you can look up there now, it goes right to the aluminum roof that you see, the fake aluminum roof. There is no insulation. There is no sound barrier. And I was always wondering why you could hear every conversation on the street. And I would be on conference calls, I would have to mute and just kick in, even though, when I was talking, because the noise from the street and we're so bad in that building, it would echo up. So some of those things are all being corrected with this, the sound, and we're going up. The other thing we're doing is there'll be no hallways. So we're opening, the entire floors are going to be open floor plans. So the light goes into where people are working near all the concrete on the outside of the building and like along here, but the other side and up where there aren't windows, we're actually where we're going to put the offices. The front of all the offices, if you've been to 1540, you know the front of all the offices are glass. Mm-hmm. It's going to mirror that whole look and the whole design of that building. So it's going to look similar in that we'll have exposed ceilings. We will have glass offices so that people in the offices are going to be against walls without windows, for the most part, and the people who work in the open areas will get more natural light. One of the problems I had with this building is just everybody had private offices, but none of them had windows. Nobody could see. The courtyard was completely corridored off for a hallway, and you were not having any natural light, and it's the only place to get light into the building. The structure of this, because it's reinforced concrete, as Tim had said, means that the demolition actually becomes quite easy. Once we do the abatement, there's some lead-based paint and a little bit of asbestos and mastic in a couple of the areas that will need to be abated. Then the demolition is pretty simple because it's not structural. You just rip everything out and build back. Then it just becomes a question of the products that we can get that we need to replace, the ordering the vendors for the glass windows and that kind of thing. I am a little concerned, and I did put our change order amount that we usually do in this, not because I'm so nervous of change orders, I'm nervous about the costs increasing related to some of the tariffs that are going on from the current president and how that might drive some of the cost increases in the next year. So that's why I am asking for the contingency today so we can keep things ordered and moving appropriately for the job. But I am very excited to get this building done and to give you the plan beyond even the restoration of all of the administrative and community space here. Is we then will move the units upstairs into a disposition. They'll get a 4% bond, and all the units will go through a restoration, too. So we're going to first do all of the first two and a half floors. This third floor has basically been area was done with some ARRA money and some of the hallways, but inside all the units, when we move it from public housing onto project-based Section 8, that'll be in 2020. We're doing the Oak Groves now. That will start in the spring, and we actually are just doing some of the last answers to the Tax Credit Allocation Committee. As of even tonight, it should be awarded this month at their meeting. We'll have the bonds approved for Oak Groves, and that will move forward in the spring. Next year, we're going to do this building, and we'll get Section 8 vouchers in this building, and we'll have to be renovating the entire building. And what that's going to get us is another 30-plus years of a new building that doesn't have leaky pipes and problems going on like this one does. If you've been in executive when the pipes are leaking, I think Greer McVeigh particularly could comment on some of the problems that we hope to have completely addressed through the renovations. But it's going to be going on a long time. We will spend the next period doing the offices, but then shortly after we do the offices, we will start with the units. In that, we are also changing some of the parking downstairs to meet the requirements of handicap spaces, so there'll be a little change downstairs for the next few years, meaning probably 2 to 3 while we do the whole building. We also have to have a staging place for the not only the office construction, but then we'll do the unit construction following. The unit construction still needs places to stage their construction activities, so the first two rows of the parking downstairs are going to be given to the contractors, first to Fineline, but then to whoever does the work and after it's bid for the unit rehab, so we're not going to have access to that. We will have visitor spaces, but they'll be over one stall, so you'll come in and go over one if you're going to park to visit us. The current commissioner's space and mail car is actually not going to be available under this diagram. It becomes, it gets reassigned as a one space, I think, and then where I am, I get kicked out as well because I'm going to be one of the handicapped spaces, the accessible spaces, and so there will be some of those changes, and we'll have construction going on in this building in one form or the other, or preparation for it for the next 3 years, basically. 2 years for the residential and less than a year for, the construction of the offices. But it's going to be an amazing thing to get done and to be able to sort of pass on to the next 30 years of OHA having a new and different office space. The other thing, the redesign, which you can't see over there, but you're welcome to look after the meeting.
I'll look after the meeting.
Is we're going to fit more departments in here because when you get rid of all the walls and the cubby holes, you can actually have a much more open floor plan. It's not going to really be divided up so much into this department's office suite, this department's. It's going to be open and more fluid. We're overbuilding. We're going to have vacant office areas, both offices and work areas. That we wanted to overbuild for the staff because staff changes and the needs change over time. And when they originally built this building and the original floor plans that we looked at were sort of funny to me because they built the building based on what their admin structure was at the time only. They didn't build for thinking it was going to be fluid and things were going to change and the staff positions would change. And that's what happens. The nature of our business has changed. We are going to include in the building and have enough room to include all of the opposite of real estate development, including Anna Katanovskaya's asset management, all of finance, all CCGS, which we're not currently in the building. We're going to have the executive office, HR, the IT department, and pretty much all of the administrative departments in our agency are going to fit very nicely into the building and still have additional room to grow. So I'm excited for no other reason because I think it improves the workflow when everybody is in the same building and we're not running all over town.
Thank you.
It does change some of our parking. The last thing I was going to say, we have staff parking upstairs or up the street, and we're going to rearrange everybody. We have also arranged with the parking lot on 15th across the street that we were looking at developing at some point, but we've renegotiated the agreement with Douglas Parking. Mm-hmm. And not only are we making a little more money than we made before, which is good, we are also taking 10 spaces for the people who work at 1540 that get parking as part of the agreement. So they'll be parking across the street rather than up the street to accommodate all of the spaces we need, which is always a challenge, I would tell you. And it's getting harder and harder to park in this city because everybody's building in the parking lots. So a lot of the spaces that some of the people who drive and paid to park, they're not even able to do that anymore. So it will be an issue that we'll talk to try and incentivize people to use BART in the future when we get to our MOUs. Anyway, that concludes my report. I don't know if you have anything else you want to add, Tim or William, but I'm happy to bring this to you. It's a lot of money, but it's a lot of deferred maintenance as usual, and I think this will catch us up.
So we had $4.5 million in our budget for this.
For this year, yeah.
So we're increasing it to six.
Well, the whole project will be six, but it won't be spent this year.
Okay.
So the other two will go into next year.
I think
whatever's
there was something
over.
About salary savings is going to be applied. Is that in this one or another
one? No, that's another one.
That's
yeah.
another one.
That's the IT contract, the consultant okay. that's been helping us with IT. This one we budgeted. We have enough in capital funds. We have over $4 million budget this year. We were hoping to come to you sooner with this, but it took the A&E a while and bidding a while.
Okay.
So we probably won't even come close this year to drawing down the $4 million. But okay. whatever we don't will then be included in what's remaining in next year's budget.
So is our staff going to be still working here for the 3 years while this whole building is being renovated?
Well, I'm moving back.
And you bring a team of people with you.
As soon as they're done, I'm moving back. I think that most of the staff working at 1805 will be eager to move back.
Okay.
Dave has cautioned everybody that there could be noise associated with redoing the units upstairs because it will echo. But I'm not, you know, I heard them when they were redoing the floor in the community room during the ARA, so it's not really that bad for me. What I do know is that the units are, there's the third floor, which has no units except for one manager's unit. Then the units are all on the fourth floor and up, so you do have a floor separating. So I just don't think it's going to be that big of a deal. And secondly, the units are only above the front of the building, not above this wraparound.
So you're talking units, but I'm talking about the renovation of
Oh,
this
we're out of this building. Nobody works
Nobody
in this building.
Works
Nobody
here
will
anymore.
Be here until we finish construction.
So
but,
you're, okay, good.
But as soon as Fine Line turns over the keys to me and says, we're done, then I'm literally going to that weekend move my stuff back and sit in my office. I'm not going to.
But this facility will still be open for us to have our board
we
meeting.
We will. If we do ever, if we can't keep the path of travel, but we did let everyone know we want to have this open once a month.
Mm-hmm.
If it turns out there's something comes up, it doesn't. We have been in contact with BART up the street, who will loan us their boardroom for the night. I personally don't ever want to do that if I can avoid it for a couple
yeah.
of reasons. One is everyone's used to where we are. Secondly, mm-hmm. parking is more challenging up there. Lastly, it's really hard to find their boardroom.
True.
It's in the back up a service elevator and on the third floor. So it's not an easy thing for anyone to navigate, but it does work very well for us, and I want to just really thank Robert Rayburn for mm-hmm. making it available and working with the staff there. When I needed help last year, I called him, and he was right on it, and we were able
and,
to
And
work
lastly,
it out.
Is there any money to fix this design flaw?
We did not include that in this work. The only thing we did is raise the floor, which we had our carpenters, so that's why we're no longer in tall chairs. So we raised the floor rather than cut the bench because it seemed to be.
I still feel like I can't see my people. It could be because I'm only 5 feet
You can
feet
raise
tall.
Your chair. You can adjust the chair. You may have a different chair. We had a little.
I need like a giant chair or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's serious.
Yeah.
You know, to feel like, you know, that they feel like we're connected.
I know. And the only thing we did was adjust the floor up during last Christmas when you were on break. The Force account came in and did that. And they did a good job. We're no longer, like, on the high chair.
Okay.
And we also moved the ramp over to this side, so it becomes very accessible rather than the way they'd done it over there, which I didn't approve
That's
of.
That's good. Yeah. The other thing I wanted to ask about was the IT upgrades that we're going to do. And so can you tell me a little bit about what the IT upgrade is going to look
like? Well, the server room is currently at 1540. So our big server room is over there. There is a smaller one here. We have to keep functioning through this whole business because that's the way the IT world works.
Oh, my gosh.
But we're getting completely new wiring and infrastructure for IT through the whole building. So it's not going to be us trying to figure. I can tell you that when Craig McBurney was here, he spent 4 years trying to figure out why my computer was so slow, and it was.
But are we going to get new systems too?
And to give you an example,
the
systems upgrades. We are getting some new servers and things, and Patricia Wells has been managing IT's process right now. We are actually now recruiting, and it's out for a new IT director through actually a headhunting firm because we want to try and get some talent in here. But and so there are going to be some changes. We're going to get a new couple different servers from Dell. We think that. Because at our consultant's recommendation, and we're actually mapping our servers and things. The main thing, though, that we're getting out of this one is we're getting new wiring, and it's much needed.
Yes, that's a big deal.
What I was going to tell you about the years that Craig McBurney was trying to fix my computer is that they were trying to fix my computer, and they weren't fixing the right one because the data was wires. They thought they were working on 157, and I was 162 or something. So for quite a few years until they did the trays, they were working, someone else in the agency had ultra high speed internet special connections, but it wasn't the executive director.
Oh.
So we're hoping by ripping it out and starting new, we can not only do that, but keep it clean by having exposed ceilings where it doesn't.
Where it doesn't.
Yeah.
So doesn't we'll be moving into the 21st century.
Yeah. And the color palette,
so
by the way.
Thank you so much for coming to see us.
The color palette and the furniture will be like we have next door. So we're keeping very consistent with everyone.
Okay. The commissioners, do you have any questions? No?
Yep. So I guess I move the resolution to authorize the executive director to execute a contract with Fine Line Construction for an amount not exceeding $6,665,000 plus a 10% contingency for major remodeling at 1619 Harrison.
Thank you so much, Commissioner. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Commissioner Montgomery. Any abstentions or the other thing? All in favor? Thank you. Thank you so much for coming. Nice to meet you.
Likewise.
Woman CEO, yes. That's what I like.
Thank you, Commissioners.
All right, shall we move on to the consent agenda?
Yes, on the consent calendar we have three items. One is to increase a little bit of our technical assistance. That is the item, Chair, that you had mentioned that we have salary savings from the director position being vacated, that we want to increase the consulting services. It's been really beneficial to the IT staff. They're learning whole new aspects of how to handle the server and mapping it. And they don't really have time to get to that every day. They're so swamped dealing with the day-to-day, but it's been very beneficial. The other one is to increase training related to us moving to the cloud. We are moving to the cloud this week in Yardi, and then we'll get upgraded this spring from version 6 to 7. So I'm excited about that, and staff has expressed they would like some retraining and new training, so we want to provide that. And the last one is just the annual calendar for travel.
Oh. Do I have any questions, or may I have a motion?
I move approval of the consent calendar.
Thank you. May I have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you. Commissioner Montgomery has seconded. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Perfect. Thank you guys so much. Written communications, Director? No.
And no one. And
recognition.
The next
nation,
I have no speakers.
Thank you. We have no speakers at this time. And now we're moving on to
written communications. One thing I included is an email I received related to CAHI, which is actually OHA's nonprofit that does our contract-based Section 8 program for multifamily. And I included it just so I could brief you very quickly and you know what's going on. We've had our contract extensions. I just signed contract extension, actually number 9, which is will be before the CAHI board. We negotiate with CGI. But it lasts 6 months. And the reason it lasts 6 months is HUD is going to want to renegotiate some terms and conditions of the contract that we've had. They're going to look toward trying to cut some of the administrative fees and costs. And one of the things we'll be looking at in the spring, this is aside from our legal battles that have been going on for years that we've kept the contract valid, but we will look very closely at what HUD's proposing because it's a lot of risk for the agency to handle 41,000 families and distribution of assistance. Mm-hmm. And we will only be willing to do that if we get fairly and accurately compensated.
Yes.
So I just want to say we'll be balancing that against the risk, and if they are going to try and cut us to where we don't have any real benefit for the residents of Oakland, then we will probably not be wanting to move forward. So they're going to have to make something that is a reasonable offer toward us and not be too dictatorial. From the memo that I included, you can see there, at least the staff are being fairly dictatorial in terms of we will be sending you new costs at the end, and I just thought the tone of it was a little harsh, and you know, any contract has to be unilateral, it can't be dictated. We did have a classic example was our annual contributions contracts, ACC, for public housing. HUD said if we drew down the capital fund, we were automatically accepting new terms and conditions of a contract. This was this past summer. And so we got together with some of my colleagues and other in my position throughout the country and submitted some letters, particularly from the MTW Steering Committee, that were extremely strong, saying that not only is it illegal, but the terms and conditions would actually damage the agency and are in violation of our MTW agreement. We got hot enough that the secretary actually rescinded the notice and we could accept the capital funds. So, you know, I think it is, when we do make noise, it does work with this administration, I would say. They do listen and they don't want to become overly bureaucratic. This is an interesting set of opportunities and risks for us, and we got to really look at it, I think, in the spring and come back. And I'll keep this board very much informed because OHA is very much involved in this contract, even though CAHI does the actual administration. All right.
Do you need any support at any of the NARA or the conferences in Washington, D.C.?
We did send one of our staff. I wasn't able to go because I was actually going to D.C. that day, but they had a meeting, there's housing finance agencies that do this work, and there's mm-hmm. been a historic conflict between the housing authorities who do this work and the housing finance agencies for the state. That organization had a meeting in, I think it was Austin, Texas, and Liam Farner, the director of CAHI, went and sat in. I called in. I was able to call in along with Doug Guthrie in L.A., and I was not happy with that meeting. I thought the tone of it was horrible. It was handled by an attorney from one of the public housing agencies, not either of us, neither L.A. or Oakland. So we're trying to build a bridge back to it. And I'm also very interested in meeting with the head of CalHFA to understand what her concerns are about us operating within the state. So, and that's happening. And Doug is going to come up as well from L.A., and we're going to meet together to hear her out because I felt like she didn't get a chance to tell us and explain to us because one of the attorneys for one of the other housing authorities was so aggressive in the meeting, she never got an opportunity to say.
Wow.
So I want to know. I think it's important that we all understand the concerns have nothing to do with this contract. It has to do with other things in the state, and we need to hear her out and understand and see if we can find a path around it. So there are lots of moving parts with CAHI. CAHI has been invaluable to us in the past for helping us have resources available to create more housing in Oakland. Mm-hmm. We want to keep that alive, but it's also been a really smart board in that we've saved the money where we have real property we own, and they purchased 5 sites. We've ended up selling 2 of the buildings but keeping the rest, and we're working with right now the Land Trust to extend the 9th Avenue site so that they can get that rehabbed and put into a really interesting model that we've never done before. There's a property on 17th Avenue that we were looking at modular construction, but we'd like higher zoning. And I also have been talking to the city about moving there are some buildings from Emeryville that are being donated to Oakland, if you've heard, for housing.
I heard something about it, but they couldn't tell me the whole story. What's going on?
They're modular buildings that kind of fit together that can help become transitional housing. And I know we're not supposed to use that word, but that's what it is. I can't remember. Navigation housing, okay?
Okay.
And I did get a call and an email from a couple of people in the city asking about that. I'm very open to these to the land that we're not using, whether it's been being held by CAHI, two sites by CAHI specifically, 17th and Bancroft, 77th and Bancroft and 17th Avenue. We also have a OHA property at 72nd and MacArthur.
Are these lots, sir, or are they built?
They're vacant lots.
Okay.
Those properties, I think, could be put to use. We right now don't have any one of them up on our development plan.
Okay.
And so I've been very open about entertaining what it could be used for and contribute to help. The timeline's important because we do really want permanent housing.
Yes.
And I don't want to give up a land resource perpetually for something that's transitional because we need to get busy with constructing more. But
people could live there transitioning, but the program could stay on.
Yeah, and what they told me is that they wanted to try and place these buildings for about 10 years, and that might be too much, and I'm not sure, and there may be better lots, but they know they exist in the city, the folks working on these issues.
That's great.
And talk to me about what you want to do, and let's see if it'll work. There are some soil issues at 17th Avenue. There's lead in the soil. So we have a plan in place, a mitigation plan with Alameda County hazardous materials, and so we have to get their approval for anything we do in the interim before we clean it up. And so there are many moving parts, but it's something that I think CAHI would be open to in that board, and certainly if we did anything at 75th and MacArthur, it would come before this board. And,
that's amazing. Thank you for even considering that. Thank you.
We'll see how our neighbors beat us up on that, but
right.
I feel like we all need to step to the plate.
Yeah.
So the other written materials very quickly. This is our calendar that just shows the holidays and our Flex Fridays, so you know when we're open or not. These are the OHA holidays per all our MOUs and a schedule for the meetings of next year. So you can get some advance notice. And this is all of the commercial travel. If you want to go to anything, particularly I want to point out, if you want to go to the NAMPA on January 28th and 29th, please talk to Inez so we can get those booked because I know a lot of folks want to go. And that is on a Sunday, but the other conference is on Monday and Tuesday if you're able to stay. Mm-hmm. So please let us know. I think that you all enjoy going to that. It's nearby. It's really inexpensive and invaluable. And I'd also say that I know that the other commissioners in other jurisdictions that get to meet and talk to you are really grateful that you're there.
Yeah. So I love going, and I highly recommend that if our commissioners hasn't gone, please attend. And also the one in Miami on January 6th and 9th, the commissioners' conferences,
they
have
one.
Really good commissioners' track of workshops that are really, you would learn a lot. You know, mm-hmm. I think I've been there twice, and I never regretted it. So I hope that you guys decide to go. Yes, the Miami one and the Napa one, whichever one you'd like.
Yeah, FADA is a great organization, and their executive director is a wonderful asset to the business and this agency, I would tell you, when we want to get some word out.
Yeah. Is there any comments from the commissioners at this time? Yes.
I just want to say, in reading the written reports, it's so wonderful to see so many of our tenants in the process to get jobs or getting jobs.
Correct.
Especially those who are carpentry trainees. So thank you, Lenita, and your staff.
Thank you guys so mm-hmm. much. Anyone else? Yes, please, Ms. Mike. No? Are you telling me you got to be more direct? Because I'm not sure if that says, do I have a question? Or I just wanted to ask you, and truly this is my last question for the night, I think. Has Linda Gardner approached us about the new Henry J. Robinson?
That would actually be Michelle Bird. It's a city property, not
Woo!
Linda. And I did talk to Sarah Bedford, who actually is running. You know, they have
yes.
the new one. Now, we're putting the assistance with Henry Robinson 1 on.
Yes. There,
and they, and I did, I talked to Sarah actually last week. Andres and I talked to Sarah Bedford about something else, and I just asked about that. They know the offer's there to do an intergovernmental for some assistance. They don't need it right now. Part of her issue is that we have those lifetime prohibitions that we talked about earlier, mm-hmm. that some people aren't able to be assisted in the Henry.
Okay.
And so she's looking at that. She knows what we do. She also mentioned, and to an extent, I mean, we made it so much easier than normal to the extent that we could, but, you know, the federal requirements are federal requirements, and they can be a little onerous. So she's looking at when she needs that, if she needs it, but it's certainly there Perfect. For that one or any subsequent navigation centers they want to create.
Well, this is the Henry J. Robinson is a building, so it's not a navigation.
The new
it's
one, like 60 the new units, one right across right? from the Taco Bell some of us frequent. I'm very excited for them.
Right from the Taco Bell?
The new one. Yeah. That's the
it's
new building.
It's not Rosa Parks, right?
No. Yeah, it's on Grand.
It's on Grand?
Yeah.
Oh, they must have bought a building over there.
They
then.
Did. That's the new Henry Robinson. The old one we're in. It's the new one you know, do a new agreement for.
I want a tour.
We could probably set that up. I wasn't at the opening, but couldn't go.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. Now we're on to the next item.
Yes.
Which is, there's also there's the executive director comments. I do have a couple announcements. One is to remind everyone we have a TASA board meeting on December 11th at 1. OPIE's December 13th at 11:30 and CAHI's December 17th at 1:30. I will be on a plane because I have to go to D.C. for a meeting on Tuesday.
Okay.
So I won't be able to participate on the CAHI board.
Okay.
But staff knows that and it should be fine. There is a toy giveaway December 19th, 2 mm-hmm. to 6 p.m. at the Service Center. If you guys want to stop by, it usually gets over more like 5, but it goes until 6 officially. That's the police department and FCP and a bunch of staff, and it's an amazing thing to do. I think I mentioned that Yardi, we're going to the cloud this week. I'm excited about that. I will be in D.C. from the 17th to the 19th next week. I don't want to go badly because of the weather, but I'm there for the MTW inaugural kickoff meeting for the leadership group, which is 5 of us for the nation. So,
wow, congratulations.
But it's an important group, and it's helped us a lot. Holiday Splendor was held last week.
You just glazed over that. What did you just say? You're like a leadership group?
Yeah, what? I am. I am.
Yes.
I am. Because the agency is highly regarded by people.
Congratulations.
The Holiday Splendor was last week, and I would tell you that the work that Lanita's staff did, the volunteers from the agency, and the work from the police department was out of control. And this, you know, it's put together by a group of residents who planned the whole event, and they did a particularly wonderful job this time. And Betty Lou Wright was on it this year, and she's here, but she'll send my regards and that I mentioned to everybody who worked on that. It was more fun this year. And I don't know why, other than the decisions you guys made. The theme was great. I had an absolute blast.
What was the theme?
And it was Paris.
Ah,
what's not to love about that?
That's fun.
But it was, and it wasn't raining. I think between those two, everybody was just. It was really, really a great time. I would tell you. I want to bring up the FMR study, fair market rent study, that we've been coordinating with all of the counties of Contra Costa and Alameda and the providers. It was going to be done by now. We have extended the contract to January 4th because we feel like we didn't get enough responses, and we feel like HUD may this time actually really criticize us, because the person who does that, who I've been in contact with, really believes that our rents are too high and we should lower the FMRs. And that's his core belief, and I know that if they can find a reason not to accept our rent study, they probably will as a result. We have done our end around. I want to give a particularly strong and wonderful shout out to our Congresswoman Barbara Lee.
Yes.
I did run into her and I said, we have to make noise. Next Tuesday, the Tuesday after I said that, she talked to the secretary and followed it up with a letter, and he actually agreed that we should probably just use our survey. That week I was also in D.C. and I met with his special assistant advisor related to public and Indian housing, who oversees it all and actually is watching the current acting assistant secretary on that. He agreed as well. But at the end of the day, we have to do the study because it's HUD, and the staffers won on that one. But I do think it's going to take some of the politics to win the day, and I'm really grateful that she's so willing, whenever we need help, to jump on the horn and make that happen. So I just want you all to aware of how she is working so strongly for us and for all of Oakland on that issue, because it really impacts the entire East Bay.
Yes.
It's her whole district and several others. And she, from what I understand, is very much coordinating with other congressional representatives all around the Bay, because everybody is in this position. You know, San Francisco, Marin, San Mateo, and Santa Clara are all doing studies. I let you know that President Trump signed a two-week extension to the continuing resolution. So we have until December 21st for Congress to do something. There is some talk that it may turn into a continuing resolution for the rest of the fiscal year, or they might get agreement, but the wall is still a question.
The fiscal year is 31st?
This one. The fiscal year is over. They didn't pass a budget. They were supposed to pass it by September 30th.
Right.
So they did a continuing resolution and kicked the can to December 7th.
Right.
Because of George H.W. Bush's, you know, they postponed it until the 21st. They still hope that they can get some agreement. From what I understand, there isn't disagreement on the HUD programs. It's other programs, including the wall, that might get it not to occur. And the wall issue becomes important when it gets to the president to sign. So there is a chance for sequestration. And we do have plans on how we can work around that in this agency, at least. But it will be devastating. And lastly, I just want to mention two things. That there was the Darren Matthew versus City of Oakland OHAPD lawsuit was dismissed by the plaintiffs, so it's no longer pending. We have met with the executive director and Angela Sandoval from Ella Baker Center and started kind of conversations with them. And I'm happy to have them at the table, and we're going to invite them to several of our community meetings. Some are led by resident groups, not by us. So they can really hear firsthand from our residents the way they want their community.
Chief was there and our officers?
Yep.
Good. And thank you, Chief.
And I want them to, and I think they've been, at least my experience with them, is they're very earnest and thoughtful about what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And I want them to know, I want them to get to know our residents and how our communities are policed and not sort of race to conclusions. So we're trying to open the door for them to our communities so that the communities can have honest conversations about what goes on and how they want their communities policed. And I do believe very strongly that communities need to have a say in the way that they're policed. I do know that that low-income neighborhoods in this country are over-policed, but they also are over-policed because residents want protection. And I think police reform is part of the bigger criminal justice system, but police reform really isn't about how many people are policing a community, it's about how they're policed. And to the extent that we can be an example for people on how you really build community-based policing, how you really get to know your communities and you're engaged and in a positive way with youth and adults in your community. I think we can help this city and this area, I think, learn how to do that better. And so having Ella Baker get involved in that and help move some of the things we're doing into the larger Oakland and Alameda County area, I think, can be beneficial. So I'm looking forward to it, and I'm glad that they reached out. It's proving positive. And that's all my report.
Thank you so much, Director. And next one is?
Announcements by commissioners.
We didn't have, did we have any commission? Commission, did we have any this period?
Nope, you got a lot this week, though.
Okay. Do we have any announcements, commissioners? I just have a comment. It was difficult to come today. And the reason that it was is because right before this meeting, I facilitate the Homeless Action Working Group. And that's where we talked about the eviction at Housing and Dignity Village that happened on Friday, mm-hmm. where a lot of resources were spent tearing down a community that was helping people because they occupied a public land that the city hadn't done anything with for two decades. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys have heard of it. And so it was hard for me to make the transition. I'm grateful for how I can serve, but I'm telling you, it's difficult to go from one world to another. So I really wanted to appreciate who I am and my ability to serve in the capacities that I do, but it was hard. And then I had to chair. I'm like, oh, so it was good. And thank you so much for allowing me to be here. Okay.
My question is, are we helping from the fire
Butte Fire. What is that?
We actually have been in contact with Ed, who is the executive director for the county, and we are doing a priority for any port-ins. We're not absorbing them at his request because he will lose admin fees, and his whole agency will go south.
Yeah, but where's the people
HUD rule.
Going?
And so we sent him information. Michelle was really great at getting on it and sending him. Okay, yeah, there is a section of the report, but yes, we are. The one thing I would tell you that I found kind of, challenging to respond to, and I had to kind of like just save that email for about 3 hours, what came from a HUD official wanting to know how many public housing units they could have people move into. Now, if you read the report that I read, there were between 200 and 300 Section 8 families impacted by the fire. We lost one entire building that is multifamily. 43 seniors were displaced. And a handful of maybe one or two vacant units in public housing is not what they need. What they need are real resources. What they need are Section 8 vouchers. And what they need are portability into other neighborhoods, which Ed Meyer very much knew and got on and we were helping with if they want to move down here. But the chances of them wanting to come this far south is probably not great. But we want to make sure we can accommodate that. They haven't reached out with other help, although, you know, some of the things may be issuing that vouchers. But my question was one is our public housing program is as close to 99% occupancy as anyone in the country, and there aren't vacant units. Secondly, we have an existing wait list. We have an existing wait list for our Section 8 program, and we have homeless families all over our city. Mm-hmm. So why aren't you committing new resources to the displaced families?
Thank you.
Anyway, I put that as nicely to this individual as I possibly could after I walked around the block.
I agree. Homelessness is a natural disaster.
Well, I don't know why after an earthquake in Alaska, the current president says they'll have all these resources, and after one of the worst fires in the history of this country that went through in a matter of hours that displaced 10,000 people and have 300 to 400 very low-income assisted families, why we're not getting the resources and response from the administration. We could all guess, but the reality is we have families who need help, we have an area that needs help, and we are the, as I like to point out, we are the 14% of the gross national product of this entire country, and they mm-hmm. should care about what happens to us.
True that. Thank you.
So how would they approach you, you know, like from, you know, from the fire? I mean, fire
how do housing. They get referred because they'll want to port here, and we know that Housing Authority Executive Director, and we all know each other very much in Northern California. Mm-hmm. Every executive director and get together regularly and twice a year, and we have quarterly phone-in meetings, and that helps. And it's just a really hard time, but they go through the same process. So they've been homeless. If they say they want to move to Oakland, then we would get a port package.
Okay.
And that would go to Michelle's department, and she's prioritized everything you can think of to process and make the families and accommodate the families as rapidly as possible. My guess is we won't get a lot of ports, but we may get a few if they have family in the neighborhood. It may be directly around the county. It's going to be really hard to find some place to live because so many people are displaced. So they may be pushed farther and farther out.
Okay. Yeah.
But they all get port to the jurisdiction. No, it's not. This is all for already assisted families. The FEMA resources, I'm not certain, are there. And that I will wait to read the reports. But for people who are on Section 8, they have a voucher, then they can port into our jurisdiction if they want, with the voucher.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. How about you, Mama? Okay, thank you.
A motion to adjourn, and we will not have closed session.
Yes, let's have a motion to adjourn, please. Thank you, Commissioner Montgomery. May I second? Thank you, Ms. Donna Murphy, and all in favor. Thank you, staff.